Today on ENR's Critical Path podcast, a construction veteran talks candidly about his experiences as a black contractor in the industry, his entrepreneurial endeavors, and how he got an office in Bulgaria. I'm Eileen Cho.
And I'm Scott Judy, Deputy Editor for Regions. Welcome to an Exec Talk Diversity Discussion.
Today, our guest is Kenneth B. Canty, President and CEO of Janus Resilient Infrastructure Demolition, Atlantic Meridian Contracting, and Freeland Construction Company. Kenneth Canty started his career with Modern Continental Construction, where he worked as project engineer on the multi-level precast segmental interchange that was the most complex part of the Big Dig in Boston. He then worked for Flatiron as field engineer for the new Cooper River Bridge and was assistant project manager for the demolition of two memorial bridges in Charleston, South Carolina. Currently, his business has offices in Boston, Charleston, Savannah, and Bulgaria. Kenneth, welcome to the ENR podcast.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much.
So, Kenneth, I was introduced to you by my colleague, Scott Judy, here, who noted that you have been doing a lot trying to push for more diversity and inclusion and equity in construction, including testifying to Congress. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Yes, ma'am, I can. You know, when you get involved in any business or any venture, you never see yourself as being in a place that you don't necessarily want to be. And I'll be a little bit more explanative of that. Anybody who's been a victim of discrimination or bad treatment or whatnot, whatever it is, that's not something you ever wished on for yourself. But when you receive it, you've received it for a reason. And perhaps the reason you've received it is so that things can change and there's a higher purpose to what you're doing. So testifying in front of Congress, which was a result of many different things, was edifying and rewarding because I knew it was going to end up helping somebody in the future, the younger version of myself.
So what were some of the things that you talked about in front of these Congress people?
Well, due to recent negotiations, I can't get into some of it right now. However, the record is clear. Basically, from a broad point of view, what I discussed was my general upbringing and experience in the construction industry, and some of the treatment I've received. But due to ongoing litigation, I can't discuss it right now. Mm-hmm. The exact specifics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, at ENR, we've had to cover incidents on construction sites, for example, that were obviously racist and other examples of sexism and so forth. So, do you feel you're a veteran in this industry? Do you feel that there's been any improvements in any?
If you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little bit about my background.
Yes.
And bring you up to speed, which will answer your question. I'm going to be honest with you. I grew up in Massachusetts. People think Massachusetts is some bastion of tolerance. It's not. It's just like anywhere else. It's got its problems. But I have to be honest, again, being honest with you, I guess I really lucked out the first set of jobs I was on being on the Big Dig because and maybe it was because my skin was maybe thicker than I thought it was, but some of the nightmares that I would hear about in the construction business, I didn't deal with them working where I was working. I was working for a firm called Modern Continental, and the individuals I worked for didn't tolerate it. And as I came to find, the reason they didn't tolerate it was because the owner of the company didn't tolerate it. He didn't tolerate it because he was an immigrant from Italy, and he had seen his fair share of corruption in his life. And when he started his own business, he did not want to participate in that. So he made sure there was a level playing field for everybody. And I remember being told when I started, two things we're going to tell you, Ken. I said, what's that? And I'm an intern. This is like 1997. He said, one thing is you're never not going to have something to do. And don't ever take anything personally. And the third thing is, we're going to treat you fair. And I was treated very fairly. I would get loaded up with work. I always had the attitude of, you know, work harder than the money they're giving you. So you're giving them a good worth. They'd have to tell me to go home every night because I loved what I did. Ended up working on that multi-segmental job you were discussing. And really, really got a fair chance. I mean, I remember doubling my salary in 5 years. I remember doubling my salary. And I got a little bit of a Pollyanna view of the business that says, okay, this is great. If I can survive here and I'm being treated fair, the content of my work and my character will mean more than the color of my skin, which is the way it's supposed to be. I will tell you that through working for Flatiron and working on the Cooper River Bridge in Charleston and working for some other firms, Jay Cashman, working with Testa, as an employee, I mean, I got south. It was a little bit different, but I was treated pretty fairly. And even when I owned my own company, started my own company in 2008, things were pretty good. I will tell you that it got worse in 2017.
Mm.
It was like a light switch mm-hmm. was flipped, and it was right. I remember distinctly when it was. It was August of 2017. And years later, a couple years later, I was able to tie it to why it happened. It was right around when the Charlottesville incident happened. Mm-hmm. And there was a change in the industry, and it just got, and for about 3 years, I didn't recognize it. I didn't know what it was. It was odd. I consider myself a pretty conservative person, and I was always, most construction people tend to be a little bit more politically conservative, just kind of the way the industry is. We certainly went backwards in the last 4 years. We certainly went backwards, but I will tell you, and this isn't necessarily a political thing, but I will tell you that I think the majority of Americans see what happened and see which way we went and see what happened in the industry based on some of the things that have been shared by others. And I see a lot of positive things moving forward, a mm-hmm. huge amount. And I'm still in the industry, still going strong. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there is just a huge opportunity coming up that really hasn't existed. I would tell you has never existed in this country. The last time this amount of work existed was right after World War II and the 1956-57 Interstate Highway Bill. But we've got a lot of positive things to look forward to.
That's right. I mean, I've been going to transportation conferences again after almost a year of nothingness. And people are just jubilant that we have this $1 trillion infrastructure bill. And Ken, I imagine, I mean, that's opportunity for the entire industry. But, you know, shouldn't it be also an extra opportunity for minority contractors?
Yeah, it absolutely should. And I will lay out, I would like to, you know, take 60 seconds and lay out a business case for that,
mm-hmm.
why people should not tolerate that behavior in the industry. The first one is an economic argument, an economic case. They say a rising tide lifts all ships, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the problems in the Black community, and may in the Hispanic community, and maybe in some of your socioeconomic communities of that happen to be white or even Asian, is poverty and crime. And the construction industry is one of those industries that you can come in at the bottom and come out at the top. You can come in with literally no skills. And if as long as you have a good attitude and willingness to learn, you can go as far as you want to go. It's still one of those industries that you can do that. Therefore, if one would say, if you could make sure those opportunities are opened up to minority contractors, Black contractors, Hispanic contractors, and what have you, there would be a market improvement in those neighborhoods, because now you're pumping money. You're pumping resources into those neighborhoods through employment and work, and it's relatively high paying jobs. Yeah. The second thing I would say is our national security is tied to our infrastructure. They don't call it the interstate and defense, the defense highway network for nothing. The ability for us to move goods and services in the military around have proper water resources, have proper ports, have proper airports, have proper railroads is extremely important to this country's vitality and its national security. However, there's so much work. We need everybody. We need all hands on deck. Mm-hmm. This is like almost like a World War II scenario where we have to gear up very quickly to get something done. That's gonna World War II was won by industry giving the military what they needed. Mm-hmm. This is almost similar, where you're going to have to gear up industry to give the country what it needs in order for it to move to 2030. And you're going to need, but the problem is you don't have enough people to do it. You go to your communities that have been disenfranchised, you go to your people who have been disenfranchised, and that's a wonderful resource that I don't believe is being capitalized on. That was the whole purpose of these DBE programs, not only to benefit those communities, but to benefit the country. And I think when people look at it like that and not through the prism of race and politics, they'll come to the same logical conclusion. We need to get this done and move forward.
Ken, this is Scott. Going back to your testimony before Congress recently, did you have any suggestions or current ideas about how industry can better welcome minority workers and minority contractors and get them involved with into the industry so that they'll be ready for the tremendous amount of work that's waiting ahead?
The first thing I would say is you've got to remember that a lot of these minority contractors are operating almost with at a disadvantage, because you're not going in with generational wealth so you can have money to buy equipment, credit lines that are based on your personal net worth, because your personal net worth is lower than everybody else's, which is why there's a DBE program. So I believe this actually needs to start with the agencies and with the government. There needs to be institutional changes such that the general contractors can do what they need to do. A lot of reason the general contractors won't do it, and I've seen some of them who want to do it. They want to be able to assist the minority contractor. Hey, you know, I know you can't go buy a Manitowoc 2250. Hey, why don't you use mine and rent mine, because the mines is already there, until you get to a point where you can buy yours. I'll use that as an example. Well, then you have the state DOTs coming in saying, oh, well, you're helping him, and he's not providing a commercially useful function. And then the general contractor can't do it, or he'll get slammed, and then the minority contractor gets left out in the cold. There are some innovative ways we can do things that can help those contractors. So maybe after 2 years of steady growth, 3 years of steady growth, the person now can move to the next level and be able to graduate from the DBE program. The other thing that, again, with the allowance of institutions, these general contractors can do is build into their cost and their schedule of values is advance payments to folks so that they can mobilize. Because one of the biggest issues is you get the job, but how do you pay your men for the first 45 to 60 days until you get paid? You need a mobilization payment. But you can't go to the bank and get a mobilization payment because you don't have the net worth for the last 40 or 50 years in your family in order to be able to get it without you pledging your house and everything else you own, if you even own that. You see what I'm getting at? Mm-hmm. So there are some very innovative things that really would be minuscule in terms of cost, if any cost at all, to accomplish that could be done. But the change needs to start with the institutions. And I will say, based off my testimony, I've maintained, close talks with those I testified with, as well as who we testified to, through the proper entities, that they are certainly looking to make the changes, but the general contractors need the institutions to change. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to just throw this problem on the general contractors. Mm-hmm. It's actually institutional problems.
And I wanted to ask, so when you were testifying, you did mentioned that your company had experience working with the Federal Railroad Administration.
Yes.
And I believe directly for the federal government. What was your experience with that, and are there any situations there in terms of federal contracting that would be advantageous to minority firms?
Okay, I'll start with the federal contracting. In 2009, my first company, Freeland, entered the 8A program. 8A program is a wonderful program. You got to have an exit strategy going in. And I was fortunate enough to meet a gentleman by the name of Hank Wilfong, and through him, Tony Robinson, who helped teach me about the exit strategy. The 8A program is very structured. And you go in, and it's a 9-year program, and every year you have business goals. So, what I did is I went in, and me being an engineer, I kind of broke it out like, okay, if I read the federal budget, cross-reference that with what bases are spending money, cross-reference that with who they're spending money with, and then cross-reference that with where are the 8A contractors I've been competing against, where are they not. I went and got the work, and we ended up doing something like 435 contracts over a 9-year period. And that included our exit strategy contracts, going to work for Amtrak, which was technically under the FRA. I found, and I will tell you guys this, the federal doing work for the federal government, you're almost in a little bubble because you get paid in 14 days. You're working directly for the federal government. As long as your paperwork is right and what you're doing is right, you're going to get paid and you're not going to get hosed over. I'm not saying the federal government doesn't have problems because I've had a couple with them. But by and large, the federal government was very fair to deal with because it was a process organization. You had to go by the process. But the exit coming out of the federal to go to the state programs, I would submit to you that the state programs would do a lot better by taking aspects of the 8A program and applying it to themselves where they can. I think that those pay terms, those 14-day pay terms are crucial. They're crucial to any small business, never mind
Sure.
minority business, but any
Right.
small business.
Well, I was just at a Transportation Research Board earlier this week, and there was a panel featuring, all people of color in the government, including Tox Umashakin, who's the director of Caltrans, and Sean Wilson, who's the first black president of AASHTO. And so, do you think these are beacons of hope that some of these changes could happen?
Yeah, they certainly are. They certainly are. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't know of those names. I'm actually writing them down now. They absolutely are. I mean, you give people a fair chance and you let them work unfettered, they'll rise. They'll rise. Folks will rise to the top, no matter who they are and what they look like. People are just looking for a fair chance. Just I would almost say when you asked me the question about, or I think it's Scott, you had asked me the question about what can these large general contractors do. Part of it is treat me like you treat other people. This is the construction industry. There's going to be some bantering going around. We're going to joke with each other because we're doing a serious job to break the ice. We're going to joke with each other. We're going to make each other laugh. We're going to make each other think. It's that type of industry. It's like a big football team. But at the end of the day, we're all there for the mission and to get something done. But I think hearing those names and knowing those people are there, it gives you hope that yeah, that we can get some things done and things can be fair.
On maybe a somewhat lighter note, I wanted to ask you. I mean, you've had an incredible career. I mean, you just started off with a bang with the big dig, and then you worked on the Cooper River Bridge, which I did a cover story on, and I just remember it being one of the most fabulous bridge projects I've ever written about. And I've written about a lot. And then you started all these companies, and some of them are building and some of them are demo. I'm kind of fascinated as to how you kind of got into such a variety of gigs.
Okay. I wanted to be a civil engineer since I was 5 years old, 5 or 6 years old. And I used to ride around with my dad. I mean, I wasn't driving, I was five, but my father would drive and I would beg him to go over bridges. And we would drive from Boston to Baltimore. Well, you've got to go over a lot of bridges. If you take a 95, you got to go over to George Washington. You take the turnpike and you go all the way down, and then you're going to cross the Delaware Memorials. We call them the Twins. Then you're going to cross the Susquehanna River. And you're going to get on 695. You know, my father's mother lived on Lindenhurst Street right off of Edmondson in Baltimore. And then you'd have to go under the triple stack I-70 interchange. That was, you know, I-70 was never completed, into the city, and you'd end up at my grandma's house. Well, I would soon then beg my father, after I learned about the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, or the Chesapeake Bay the bridges at Annapolis, if he was driving down south to South Carolina, where he was at, if we were driving back to Baltimore to Boston, and I would beg him to drive on them. And I remember going over the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, the Bay Bridge out of Annapolis. He looked at me and said, "I'll never do that again." And my father was a hard man. He was a World War II Pacific War combat veteran, wow. 22 months in theater. I was raised by basically World War II veterans, and the look like he had on his face after he went off of that bridge. And I said, "Man, if there's something that's bad enough to scare my dad, what would that be?" And that kind of got my bridge. Really becoming a bridge guy. And I, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't good in math until I understood the deflection theory, mm-hmm. and how it relates to beams and things like that, as it relates to derivatives and calculus. And when I got into the entrepreneur bug was when I had gotten laid off. My father said, "How's that feel?" I said, "It sucks, quite frankly." He goes, "Well, now you know you got to work for yourself, because then you can never be laid off. You'll only lay off yourself." And from there, I got an opportunity to buy a construction company. I'll be honest with you, at the time, I didn't know what the DBE program was. In 2008, didn't know what it was. I just knew what it was like to be a contractor, an engineer, and a project manager. And slowly and surely, I started looking at, as they tell you in federal contracting, it's not about what you're selling, it's about what we're buying. So I started looking at, well, what are people buying that I like to do? And from there, Freeland is not doing much of anything right now. But Freeland was a general contractor who started getting into demo things and marine work. Freeland got targeted in that 2017-2018 oh, wow. time frame. Hmm. Then I started Atlantic Meridian Contracting. And that was a building company, and I went and started, you know, based on my past performance, started doing bridge demo, and then Janus Materials, which is my latest venture, which provides me the most amount of joy, is a repurposing company, and I started looking at climate change, and climate change is real. We can debate on what's causing it, but it's real. You can look at all the king tides that you never used to hear about in Charleston 15 yeah. years ago, that they're like every month. Mm-hmm. So something's happening. And I said, and we came up with a way that said, and it was really came out of necessity of getting rid of material. If we could figure out a way to process the demo material in a structural way, and all material contains potential energy, how do you convert it to kinetic energy? Well, you have to apply something to it to do that, right? Like a match to gasoline. It's all potential until you light it, and then it becomes kinetic. We developed the process was the match. The process of demolition was the match, and the relationship was the way that the relationship with somebody knowing what they wanted was basically we were able to provide pieces for their new house out of a bridge that was coming down. Right now I'm being asked to span an 80 foot body of water in the middle of the woods in South Charleston County, where I live in Charleston. And I am now looking at bridges that are coming down that have an 80 foot span that can go into its place. So we're basically repurposing material at net carbon zero, mm-hmm. results. So really the businesses came out of the needs that were presented, because we're going to be fighting this climate change, and we're going to be trying to do it in an economic way. And by the way, we also have to save money while we can.
Right.
And so the businesses have always come out of a need that was there, but they've also come out of a love and a passion that I and others had. And what we try to do is get those people together to move forward. Mm-hmm. Because I always believed if what you're doing is fun, then getting paid is a bonus.
Great philosophy. But I'm dying to ask you, it'll say you have offices in Boston, Charleston, Savannah, Bulgaria?
Yeah, I had a gentleman work for me for quite some time. I'll give you his initials, BB. And he, computer whiz. And we met in 2011, and he was doing our computers. He came on, worked with us full time. We actually were operating off of Apple platforms, which nobody in construction was doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody large, anyway. And they were like, oh, it can't be done. You need IBM. So I'm like, well, how come we're doing it then? There's a way to do it. You just have to know how to do it. So BB was working for me. He took an interest in the construction because he was a process guy. And something about that, the way he came up and that work ethic he had, being from that area of the world, Bulgaria, really was entrancing to me. And he explained how he came up and the things he had seen. And I said, that sounds very familiar to me. And we actually clicked because he learned English by listening to Tupac Shakur rap records.
Nice.
That's how we learned English. So we joked about that. And he said, I'd like to know more about construction. Taught him scheduling, which was my background. And and he was a graphics guy. So we started designing our critical lifts and our picks and using 3D modeling and 4D modeling to do so. And one day he said, I got good news and bad news. I said, what's the bad news? He goes, the bad news is I got to move back to Bulgaria. I said, well, what's the good news? He said, the good news is the last time you sent me there on vacation, I figured out how to do everything I needed to do from Bulgaria that I've been doing for you in America. I figured out how to do it in Bulgaria. And since I'm 7 hours ahead, it's like you're getting it done in the future. It's
nice.
Like your own little time machine. So that's how we got over to Bulgaria. I haven't gotten over there yet. I plan to, but it's really at a place in the world where a lot of things are going to be happening. I've always had a lot of international friends from Turkey, Bulgaria, places like that. You know, certain places on the continent in Africa. And this world is going to be, you're going to need to know how to interact with others and play with others and trade with others.
Absolutely.
That's the next phase. It's not just about America.
Mm-hmm.
America is one small piece of the puzzle.
Ken, I wanted to ask you about your other efforts. I know you're pushing for diversity in the construction industry, but you're also part of a campaign, I believe, with a certain group. And
yes.
You can tell me about your involvement with that and how that's going. And also, I believe you're also interacting with the student AGC chapter at Amherst, and get your experience, talking to young people.
Sure. I'll start with the AGC chapter. I went to University of Massachusetts as before, and I actually serve on their board of advisors for the College of Civil Engineering. And the AGC, I had always been going up there to give presentations on demolition and critical picks and careers in civil engineering, as I called the presentation. And at some point, the AGC chapter reached out to me and said, hey, we'd love for you to come up and talk about the DBE program, because, this was right after George Floyd happened. And we are really trying to understand how we can play a role in making things better. And I said, well, to be quite honest with you, I said, the AGC has a horrible reputation in the DBE world. And I explained why and some of the cases and connected them with the experts who knew about it. And they said, we had no idea. And I said, well, I tell you what, guys, I am so encouraged that you guys are reaching out to somebody like me to talk about this. How can I help you? And they said, could you come up and talk to our students about your experiences. And at first we did it virtually, and about a year and a half ago we did it virtually, and then we were able to come up in person almost exactly a year later and discuss our experiences and explain and hit those students, these are the things that they don't teach you in school. We called it what they didn't teach me as an undergrad. And these are the things they don't teach you in school, this part of ethics. And it's not just dealing with DBEs or black contractors or what have you. It's how do you, do they talk to you about colleges? It's not acceptable to treat women on a construction site any different than men. That could be your daughter. That could be your sister. That could be your mother. It's not acceptable. They don't teach that. It just is you need to be a bit more tolerant because we're all out here to get this done. So that was the AGC student chapter where it started at a certain place. It's certainly grown to a bunch of other places in terms of inclusion in the business. Regarding the campaign, Color of Change, the organization that a lot of you have heard about regarding societal, social justice campaigns, learned from a friend of mine, Mr. Jimmy Delahunt, and a problem he was having. They reached out to him and he said, why don't you guys do something about this in the construction business? Because I'm tired of dealing with it. I'm tired of not being treated fairly because of who I am. And I work just as hard as anybody. And they took on his campaign and they asked me to be involved. And I said, sure, I'll be involved, and acted as an advisor to them on behalf of others. And right now that campaign is still going strong, and I'll allow others. It's called hashtag Pay Black Contractors. And it is out there and it is out there and still going strong. And I tell you, they have made an impact. They have made an impact. I've sit there and watched it. I never believed something like that would ever happen. Hopefully we can get to a point where we don't need to do those things, you know?
Sure.
let's argue about what the pay app is. Let's argue about did the concrete hit 70% so I could strip the forms?
Right.
Let's argue about, hey, is that rigging niche? Let's make the assessment. Hey, is that rigging still good? Can we use it or do we need to get new rigging? Let's argue about not keeping rigging in the mud so it lasts longer. Let's argue about how we do our crane inspection reports more thoroughly. Those are the things I like talking about. Nobody likes discussing this stuff. Anybody thinks, oh, you're using it because you like, I'm like, no, I don't. You think I want to talk about this?
I want to be talking about construction.
I want to talk about construction and making money and going home to my family and having fun on the weekends.
Right.
Just like you guys do. That's why we're here, right? We're here to enjoy ourselves and have fun and be joyful as the creator put us on this earth to do. Yes.
Yeah. I cannot believe that we're now kind of running out of time, Ken, because this has been so awesome to hear about all that you're doing, whether you want to do it or not. And obviously the stuff you want to do is great construction work. So to wrap up, I mean, any other messages or thoughts you want to share?
I'd just like to share to anybody listening to this that no matter who you are in construction or what have you, you know, you win some, you lose some. You want to make sure you're winning more than you're losing, but make sure you're partnering with the right people and make sure that you're having those conversations in the very, very beginning that, hey, this is what I expect. This is what I want out of this job. And I want it because I'm giving you a service. So I would want this, but make sure that person tells you, this is what I expect. And this is what I want. Cause it's gotta be a two-way street. And then the final thing I would leave you with is our leaders are at the top in these institutions. Please, please, please pay attention to what is going on out there. It's going to take institutional change to whatever's happening. We've got a lot of things happening in the world right now. But at the end of the day, you know, there will be a place called the United States of America where people will live, work, and play in commerce. And we've got to work together to get things done.
Excellent. Excellent way to end the podcast. Ken, thanks again. And I look forward to meeting you someday and writing about some of your projects.
Absolutely. When I come out to California, which I'm actually scheduled to do sometime in the next few months, I will reach out to you.
Please do.
Same here, Ken. I think we're kind of in the same part of the country. So maybe in the near future, you and I can get together on a project or otherwise. And great talking to you today. And I'm sure I'll talk to you in the future.
Thank you.
This has been another ENR Critical Path podcast. I'm Eileen Cho.
And I'm Scott Judy. To hear more podcasts, go to enr.com/podcasts. You can also follow us on Apple or Spotify.
Thanks for listening.